This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. It has taken us 9 months to get back on the airwaves and one slight take where I forgot to hit the record button, it turns out. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. Joining for the return is from Hungary. Zoe Carr has just returned, the high-performance coach for the Vic Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
And the man that has not left the country, Darren Best, the head coach for the Vic Metro Men. Welcome to the pod, Bestie.
Just a brief drive in from Cranbourne South for me.
Not quite the same.
Yeah, like not quite the same.
Eastling and Emirates, not quite the same thing. But first podcast in person. We've had Bestie on previously via Zoom, as everything has been. So there have been some ratings and reviews over the last 9 months on iTunes. We do appreciate those. But if you would like to like and subscribe to the podcast, and of course, please share it where you can as well. We'd love to talk to as many coaches as we can over the course of however long this podcast lasts for before we have another 9 month hiatus in this space. So what we are going through today, coaches, is a little bit of a review of the changes that have been in place over the last however long it's been now, so over probably the last 12 months, more than anything else. There's obviously been a lot of work going on behind the scenes from the high performance end. We're going to touch on those. We're going to touch a little bit on the size five basketball and the changes that have been there and what we've seen since then, and the mandatory coach accreditation that has come in over the last couple of weeks as well that we can discuss. So there will be a lot of acronyms thrown around. There will be a lot of jargon thrown around. I do apologize for that. We will try our best to explain everything as best we can so that it makes sense to everyone, because we do live in that world of acronyms and you know, abbreviations where we possibly can. It's I should also mention, joining us in the warmest room in Basketball Victoria, the gaze room, is the man behind the lens that you never see on social media. Jared Potter has wandered into the gaze room. Usually this is where he takes pictures of Ash looking stupid. But thankfully we've moved on from the Ash days at Basketball Victoria. So we are looking at the changes to the high performance program. So Bestie, give us a quick overview. What are the programs that are in place for the Metro athletes? When do they start? What do they look like? What are the commitments? What does it look like for a kid joining a high performance program?
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess the first thing to point out is that we were really keen to continue the one state stuff. So that's why some of the naming has come across the country as well. But if we start with under 12s, although it's not high performance, that's the first experience kids have with us in Metro. So they'll come into our skills days in the April school holidays, and we'll still run those in two locations, one in the southeast and one in the north. And from there, we'll pick kids to play in the Metro Jamboree in the July break. And we'll figure out where we'll put that later in the year, but we hosted it at Wyndham this year and it was really successful. So that's under 12s. Under 14s, the kids will be now doing Future Development Program, which is FDP. So that there's our first acronym for the day.
And FDP stands for what?
Future Development Program.
There we go. Yeah. Just making sure people get it.
And they'll actually be done in regional academies, much the same as what country have. So it'll be Future Development Program, State Basketball Center Academy, if that makes sense. So the kids will trial for those through our trials in September, school holidays, along with some that have been identified through our elite camp in September already. And for them, they'll have an intro camp, a Metro intro camp, and then they will start programming on Tuesday mornings at the hubs. So we, as you know, we have the six Metro hubs, but we also have Sandringham and Burundara that we run as sub-hubs that FDP will be run out of on Tuesday mornings. They'll do five mornings a week. Five mornings per block.
I was going to say, a couple of parents have just shocked themselves as to the commitment levels.
Yeah, you want to come into FDP, you better be ready.
Sorry,
I got that wrong. They will do five mornings per block. So, yep. And then from there, we'll actually have a under 14 country Metro challenge where we'll play the Metro FDP athletes against the country Metro athletes. There'll be a selection process for that. So not every FDP athlete will get a game, but we'll keep them on their toes with having to trial for that. And then they'll have a graduation camp. So that's the FDP program for Metro. Very similar for country, I believe, Zoe, right?
Yeah, pretty much exactly the same, except the only difference for us might be that our sessions may be on a weekend or wherever we can get venues and availability. Obviously, with travel and things, we have to be a bit more mindful of having things in the mornings. So maybe on a Saturday, like it's run now. So everything is pretty much the same.
Yeah, we were mindful of making sure that the available hours on the floor were the same with Metro and Country. The branding is the same, so the athletes will have the same FDP uniform. So that way, when they come together to compete in the Country Metro Challenge, it all flows. So from there, the kids will trial for SDP, which is our next acronym, which will be the State Development Program. So we have those trials in September as well. And to get into those, much the same as the under-14s, we accept nominations from DOC. So we call for nominations through the DOCs. They nominate their top four or five athletes. And from there, we have them come to trial and we select them for our state development program. SDP will be a little bit different this cycle, which we did a review with all of our high-performance coaches about a month ago now, I think, Zoe, was it? Yep. And identified some potential changes. The first one will be we will not be having the Tuesday morning for SDP anymore. That's obviously been taken place by FDP. We'll still have the Monday night shooting or shooting and concepts and then the Thursday morning. So we'll have the two sessions. The requirement previously was that you needed to attend two out of the three. And we found overwhelmingly the athletes were attending the Monday night and the Thursday morning anyway, because doing the Monday night, Tuesday morning double is tough. But we will replace those available hours with a couple extra camps through the cycle. So the available hours will still be the same. So we'll have an intro camp and then those athletes will do the same Monday, Thursday cycle at their hubs for 6 weeks in the block, whereas FDP is only five. And then we'll have two All-State camps this year, which is I think is a big bonus. It's not just the one. So once again, Metro and Country coming together. And then we'll have just a couple of extra camps through the year to make up for those Tuesday available hours. So that's SDP. The biggest change to SDP is we've made the alignment with Country that you need to be in SDP or NPP to be eligible for a Vic Metro State team now. So just aligning the programs. And because of that, we've combined the trial for the under-18s. We did this last year due to COVID and overwhelmingly it was positive. I think bringing the same athletes out to parade and trial 2 weeks apart is just, yeah, it's nonsense basically.
Good overview of what's coming through. And I mean, Country have done that for a number of years now where they've had the SDP trials and the state trials at the same time.
Yeah, but, and that was purely logistics. You know, we can't bring everybody in together for SDP trials. And then as Bestie said, 2 weeks later, you know, we've got people coming from Mildura and down Gippsland way. So it's a fairly big ask. So we just logistically put it all together in one. So we're selecting SDP and state team process starts at the same time.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. And it is a massive imposition for a lot of families, obviously. I mean, we love basketball and you know, we live and breathe it and all those kinds of things. But we do have that sort of thing in the back of our mind too, is that we don't want to be the only thing going on in these kids' lives and these families' lives. And you know, a lot of these families also have other siblings that wander around and have to do their kind of things too. So we do want to make it as accessible, I feel like, as possible. And you alluded to it, Bestie, like the Monday night, Tuesday morning, that's a tough double for kids that have gone through a shooting session and literally 12 hours later are getting, or less than 12 hours later, are getting up again to jump on court. That's a tough ask.
Yeah, well, and we don't want it to be a roadblock of any kind. We want as many kids in our programs and getting access to our coaches as often as possible. And whether it be travel or amount of travel or the timings and all those things, we don't want them to be a roadblock. So we're trying to remove all of that so we can have as much access as possible within reason to the athletes and be able to try and push them along and fast track their development.
Yeah. I also think for us with a Metro standpoint, for the coaches that are running SDP, from time to time, the numbers were a bit sporadic because the athletes had the option to go to two out of the three. And given what we've seen through the last AJCs and obviously Zoe coming back to talk to us from Worlds, the end of penetration decision-making is a real area of focus for all of us. And we need bodies on the floor to do that. So we're at a stage now where we probably need 6 or 7 kids minimum per hub. And from time to time, because of the flexibility, we might only end up with 2 or 3. So I think, you know, that will help and it will help with the coaches planning and it will also make for a better environment through those colder months when there's more kids on the floor together.
It is. And I mean, as you say, 6:30 in the morning is not a phenomenal time to be up and training and those kinds of things. But Court availability is what it is. We all know people's calendars are what they are too. Like, there are only limited spots that we can actually get access to these kids. Like, they play so much. So trying to find some time to get some skill development stuff in. And as you say, it still needs to be team-based. Like, we can talk individual development as much as we want, but can you really do one-on-zero training and get a lot better? Like, I'd probably suggest not. Like, there's always some space for it where you can improve, but it has to be done against defense, or it has to be done with a read in mind. And you can't always do that unless you do have numbers. So, I mean, how many do you have at most of your hubs, numbers wise, Zoe? Like, kids on floor?
Yeah, probably the most at any hub is about 34, I think, is our biggest hub. But it ranges. Yep. When it's winter and high load time, it could get all the way down to 4.
Yep.
So, you know, again, that's what we're trying to avoid have happen, to make the sessions as useful as possible for everybody, not just the athletes, also the coaches. You know, we've got great coaches in all of our hubs, and we want to make it still exciting for them to turn up and not put all their time into a session plan and then rock up and only have 2 athletes to then have to throw that session plan out and come up with something else.
That makes a lot of sense. And the workload on our coaches too. You know, 3 sessions a week can be really taxing on coaches that are also trying to work and coach their own teams. You know, that becomes really problematic for them. So the idea of more camps, like Country have lived in this world of camps for a long time, and, you know, that's nothing new to you guys. For a few of the metro kids that have to come to things like this, it might be a new experience for them, but a great experience as well. Like, I think it's a really good thing. The more we can get our Country and our metro kids on floor together, like, they're only going to get better. Like, well,
as a coach, the camps are just way better. Yeah. You know, obviously the kids, when they come to a morning SDP session, we're on floor for an hour, but by the time we do a warm-up cool-down, it's really probably 45, 50 minutes, and then they're gone. Whereas in a camp, we don't obviously just keep them on court for 8 hours, but what we can do is we can do other workshops when they're off their feet. So we do our nutrition talks, we do our S&C talks, you know, we do film review, scout review, all this type of stuff. So those athletes, when they're off their feet, we're still engaging them. So it's just so much more bang for buck. And the BV All-State camps have always been great, and to have another one would just be fantastic.
And a really good opportunity as well to see the transfer. Like, when you work on something in the morning session, you can then re-emphasise it, say, 2 hours later when you're into your afternoon session. I think that's a great way to do it, whereas you don't always get that transfer from a 6:30 a.m. session on a Tuesday into the Thursday session, because something gets lost in there. Whereas you can continually re-emphasise the same things for the athletes, it makes it a lot easier for them to just improve. Like, and they get put in that situation where it has to be scrimmage-based, which is always more enjoyable for the kids, but also more enjoyable for the coaches. Like, we enjoy being involved with the scrimmage and seeing the decision-making and trial and error learning. So I think it's a great way to go about it. So coaches that want to get involved in these types of programs, how can they get involved if they have an interest in doing this?
So a few different ways. Obviously, they can contact us directly. So their relevant high-performance coach for their, you know, if they're a country coach, they can contact myself or Coops. If they're a metro coach, obviously Lauren and Bestie. Or worst case scenario, email Rob, and Rob will make sure it comes to us. And he's kind of our PA, right,
Bestie? Oh, jeez.
No?
Yeah, worst case scenario is email Rob.
That's the worst possible outcome.
Wow.
No, but if you're sending in, here we go. Here's a segue for you. Okay. If you're sending in your topics that you want us to talk about for Talking Split, and then you want to tack on to the end that you are interested in being involved in our camps, that's a good way to go.
You've done that very well.
And thank you very much.
Look, to be fair, there have been a number of coaches that have reached out over the last couple of years that have started to get involved in camps, that have listened to the podcast and have thought, actually, I think I can have a crack at this. Like, there's been a couple of the coaches that have jumped into the wheelchair space and the ID space when Julia Walsh has been on talking about it, and Jonty was on last year as well talking about it, which has been great. Like, we've been able to pick up some extra coaches. So the fact that you're even listening to this podcast at the moment means that you are a passionate coach that wants to be involved in and get better as a coach, which is a great thing. So if you are interested in being involved in any of these programs, please do reach out. Even if it's a case of, look, I don't think I can commit to, you know, the entire program, but I feel like I could do maybe 3 of the 5 weeks of FDP. Like, great, jump in for those 3 of the 5 weeks, because the hope is that the coaches take this information that they're getting at the FDP sessions or at the STP sessions back to their association and implement it there as best they can. Like, you don't get better unless you actually go and implement it yourself.
Yeah, well, and that's the hardest part for us as a high-performance team, is we want things to be consistent and to make it easier for the athletes and easier for transfer and all those sort of things. But we also understand that coaches have their own way of doing things as well, and sometimes that can be a good thing, but having access to different voices and different ways of either teaching or implementing things. But if we can have more coaches involved in our camps or involved in our program and seeing what we're doing and why, it can only help us with then getting that gaining that consistency across the board, which then helps our athletes so they're not as confused. Because there are sometimes, you know, I find myself, because basketball is brilliant at naming the same thing eight different things. So, like, I find myself having to say, you might know this drill as alley drill or corridor or this. So instead, if we've got more people involved, then we can gain that consistency and things become easier for everybody.
I've been really impressed with the FDP coaches for this cycle. We ran a pilot program this year in Metro. We had a bit smaller base than what we'll have next year. We've had nearly 30 coaches come in that haven't previously been in the SDP program. We reached out to associations to nominate some up-and-coming coaches or coaches that want to get into the pathway, and it's been phenomenal. They've all jumped on court, they've been learning, and the communication back and forth has been fantastic. They're really hungry for it, and I think, like you said, Rob, it's a small introduction, one morning a week, you know, and then they can see where they're at with their coaching career or what they want to do. And then if they want to step up into SDP, and we've had a couple of coaches make that transition already, which is fantastic.
No, I think it's a really good way of doing things. And especially for the coaches that may not be coaching, say, a first team on a Friday night or just coaching good domestic teams, which, and again, nothing wrong with that, but want access to better athletes. I think this is a great way to go about it, because we all know as coaches, you get better as the athletes get better as well. You have to find a way to stay involved and stay up to date with that. But you get access to better coaches, and we all know, and we talk about it a lot, the ability to network with other coaches and find out what they run, how they run things, what their terminology is, what their teaching points are, what their core presence looks like. This is all really valuable stuff for coaches to go through, because you might have only been involved for a small amount of time as a coach, and you've only really had sort of one person that you've copied a lot along the way. You end up becoming that person. The more you can reach out and find other coaches and find different ways of doing things, I think that's the best way to do it. Like, I know for me, my coaching got better the more people I went and hung out with. It wasn't a case of I'm just going to align myself with one person. It was a case of I'm going to try and align myself to as many different people as I can. Pick and choose what you want from there. Like, do I want to take that with me? No, maybe not. I'll leave that one where it is, but I really like what they do with this. So trying to find different ways to network and be involved. Coach kids from outside your association as well is a great way to do it. You can get, I don't want to say stale, but you can get very used to coaching the same kids over and over. So going to coach someone that you may play against on a Friday night, like I know, like I do run an academy session for the country program out of North, I think it's called, or something along those lines. We've got one of the coaches that comes along that coaches against a couple of girls on a Friday night. And they think it's hilarious. Like, they walk in every Saturday, how'd you go? Yeah, not too bad. How did you go? Yeah, we're okay. Oh, we played you last night and we won. And they love it. Like, it's great little sort of banter on that side of things too, but it's great for them to now be coached by someone they coach against. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that we want our coaches to coach as many kids as they possibly can. We also want our kids to learn from as many coaches as they can. We're not going to sit here and say that one person has all the answers, because it's not the case. There are coaches out there and there are kids out there that would probably like or dislike playing for me, that would, you know, prefer to play for you, Zoe, or prefer to play for you, Bestie. Like, it's just a little bit of a change as to what suits everyone. So the more people that we can have involved in that space, I think it's going to be really beneficial for everyone. So please do look out for those when they start coming up. So if you are a coach or if you're a director of coaching, please make sure that your athletes get the information when it goes to them, and you really encourage them to attend these, because it is going to be a great program, I think, across the state. If you're a coach and you want to be involved, please do reach out. And we are at that time of year as well, and we'll touch on it a little bit, that we are looking for state coaches for the next 12-month cycle as well. So under 20s, under 18s, under 16s, boys and girls, country, metro, except for 20s, where it's just all in one state. There is an expectation when those applications come in that you have done something in the Basketball Victoria pathway previously. It can't just be, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and I want that job. Well, have we seen you coach? Have you given back to the pathway at various stages? Are you actively involved in the pathway? Have you done camps, jamboree, academy, those types of things? Are a great way of getting a foot in the door to say that, yeah, I'm actually about this. I understand what this pathway looks like for me and how I'm going to be involved in it. I think that's a really easy way of just sort of finding out what's first.
Yeah, I think, and this is probably a whole podcast on its own, and we may have even done one, but it's really important to remember in those circumstances that, you know, you can't just walk in and think, oh, I've coached on a Friday night, so therefore I'm a state coach now. It's not the case. You know, there's more to it than just the ability to coach. You know, you've got to have given back to the program as well and shown us that you're committed to this program rather than just using the program as your stepping stone or whatever that might be. So, and it doesn't have to be full-time commitment to everything. As Rob said earlier, if, you know, there is flexibility there, but there just has to be that willingness, because there's far too many coaches, and I will say probably younger coaches, that are at the moment just trying to get there quickly. And the quicker you try and get there, the more likely you are to fail when you get there. So the more you can be involved in our programs and get the information and get the learnings and learn from other coaches, because we've got so many of them that you can learn from, the better you'll be when your time does come. You know, you've put in the work and you've done the time and you finally get that job, then the better off you're going to be.
I think the biggest, probably most underrated factor in that is if you've been in our programs, you know the athletes for the team that you're applying for. You know, that's the biggest thing. What's your depth chart like? You might know the kids in your club, but do you know them across the state or in the metro program? And often you'll see, have you been in our program for several years? You've probably gone through FDP now with them. Maybe you've gone through SDP and SCC with them. And then it's like, yeah, I know this age group very well. I've had experience with them. Now I'm going to put my hat in the ring to be a state coach. That there is probably one of the single biggest factors with why you should be in our program, is knowing the athletes, having a relationship with them, knowing what their strengths and weaknesses are, which will help you construct a team to go away and compete.
And that can't be underrated. If you don't know who the athletes you're picking from, it's going to be very difficult to pick a state team in that space. So how many people, just out of curiosity, Bestie, more than anything else, without notice, how many people would you talk to when it gets to, like, selection time for the camps and things like that? Like, do you just go to the director of coaching in the club? Do you talk to just the coaches at the camp? Like, how many people would you touch base with?
Well, I guess we'll go over the whole process together. Yeah. So our Metro administrator, Paul Grote, he's just come on board. He's doing a great job. He will email out nomination forms to all the DOCs. So we took some feedback from a few DOCs that I spoke to saying that they would like the nominations earlier. So we've done that. So we said, yeah, we can call for the nominations earlier. So well done to all those DOCs that got their nominations in on time. For those of you that didn't, well, I'll explain a little bit how that makes it difficult for us. So once the nominations come in, Paulie will then format them all and send them to us. So we will then look to see, first of all, how many athletes we have nominated. We definitely look to see which associations haven't nominated, because obviously sometimes, for example, a particular club might have not got it in on time. So we'll make contact with them again, say, hey, if you want your kids to be considered, which you should, you need to get your nominations in straight away. So from there, we'll then look to see the total number of kids and the number of coaches plus venues that we can have to host these camps. And we all agree that there's no point just having an open-ended tryout with 25 kids on one basket, because nobody will be evaluated correctly. So currently we cap the number of nominations per program. Depending on the program, we change the cap. But generally it's anywhere between 5 and 6. So we'll look at the total number, and if it's way over, we start getting on the phone and say, look, who is this kid in the top 50? Do you really think they are? Other people through our network we talk to, past state coaches, you know, SDP coaches, FDP coaches, and effectively we get our list of athletes and then we'll send out the invitations. So we say to the DOCs, please don't tell the athletes that you've nominated them, because that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be selected, which I think is very important. And then the next bet is, once we put the invitations out there, and I've had this trouble before as a DOC, sometimes the athlete won't register. So that doesn't necessarily mean they don't want to be in it. Maybe they don't see the email, whatever it might be. But that's pretty much the process. And from there, we will then start the trial. And during the trials, we have obviously the high performance head coach for the gender there. We also always have the other HPC for the other gender there as well, just to help. Then we always have our hub leads filling the role of selectors with the HPCs, and then we'll have basket coaches for each basket. So when it comes time to vote yes or no on a kid, we sort of have a policy that we have to have sort of a quorum on each kid, whether it's yes or no. You know, it won't just be the basket coach that has the say. So we have selectors that sort of wander around each court, make sure they get eyes on each kid along with us. And when in doubt, if we're ever unsure, we always jump on the phone after a camp as well. So quite often we will have several kids on a list that say we need to put a call in because maybe they've maybe not had a good day, but we know, for example, you know, they're quite good.
Yep. So any different with the Metro crew? Obviously no directors are coaching, so it's a little bit different, the trial and registration process.
Yeah, so we don't have to cap our numbers. We're normally okay with our numbers. But we, because for that exact reason, not there are a lot of clubs that we deal with that don't have a director of coaching or somebody that has the ability to make that sort of nomination or anything like that. So ours is more of an open call, which we can afford to do because we're not dealing with the size of the Metro athletes in terms of numbers. So we have that, and then we come into our camp. In terms of selection, it's the first point of call for our state coaches to start, I suppose, their process of cutting down to our cup camp or our cup teams. So we'll have an under 16s and under 18s. So they'll pretty much, the state coaches will pretty much be, take the lead on that with myself. And generally we have a couple of hub leads involved in that as well. And then with the 14s and 15s, similar thing. The under 16 coach will be involved with the 15 selections for the Southern Cross Challenge because they are in contention for the state team, the under 16 state team. So he or she will be involved with that. And then we'll have hub leads helping with the under 14s as well. So we've got eyes across the place, and we have a one thing I will say about the country coaches, which is fantastic, we always have a great contingent of coaches, basket coaches from all over the state that come in and help out. And we always touch base with them too before we make any selections, see how they went on their court, or if, like Bessie said, they're from their club or from their region and they know them from the area, we check in and make sure we've seen the right thing as well. So, yeah, it's a little bit the same but a little bit different for us.
It's really important we don't miss athletes, of course. So like, it's probably a little different with Metro because you guys do have the directors of coaching involved there, that you probably aren't going to miss an athlete. With country, because it's an open call, you do have that ability to sometimes miss an athlete. So you do rely a little bit on word of mouth to make sure that the right people are coming and the people that are involved with the various associations around the place. So we do have to be very clear that you, to make a state team, you do have to be in SDP, sorry, I butchered that already. But you don't, you know, it's not necessarily the same program. Like they, as much as it's the same trial, it's not the same program. The state team is very much for the here and now, whereas the SDP is very much long-term athlete development. They are two different things. So I'm sure we'll get some questions in that space. But if there are any athletes that do have any questions on the countryside, hit up Craig Hockley. He's your guy to go to there. On the Metro side, hit up Paul Grote. Any coaches that want to be involved, you can obviously touch base with your relevant high-performance coach, or worst-case scenario, you can send me an email along the way as well. So that sort of covers off the changes, I feel like, that have been made that we'll also implement. And, I mean, the hope is, this may not be instantaneous change. We've seen the kids better straight away, but this might take a couple of years for everyone to get their head around and what will change. And we all know that these programs are fairly fluid. Like, they will change year on year depending on the needs. Like, initially the idea of three SDP sessions to give the kids flexibility was on the money because the kids needed that, whereas now we're sort of saying, well, actually, they don't necessarily need the flexibility. They voted with their feet as to what works best for them. So the change can still be made in that space. So this will be a constantly changing process, which I think is a good thing as well.
Well, I think the best thing for everybody out there to know is that there's literally a review done from every cycle. You know, there were surveys sent out to stakeholders to find out what worked, what didn't work, what could be better. We got all the HP leads, hub leads together in a room with the high performance coaches, and we workshopped it. What worked, what didn't work, what does the attendance numbers show us? You know, so I think if we just keep doing the same thing over and over, that's not great. We need to adapt and always striving for greatness is what we're working for.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that covers off the changes. Speaking of changes, size five basketball. So it's been a good 9 month, 10 month little cycle since this got implemented. So it's come in at the VJBL level for under 12s basketball. There have been a number of associations around Victoria that have taken this on board as well, which has been fantastic to see. A couple of associations still playing with the size six. Yeah, that's their call. That's not a problem at all. But it's amazing. I have gone to a couple of those associations and taken coaching courses where they've sort of said, yeah, why do we still play with the size six when everyone plays with the size five? And my answer is also a very political, oh, well, that's just what your association chooses to do.
Speak to your club.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Like, we can probably send you the resources to potentially get this over the line. So I've seen a fair bit of under-12s basketball this year, and I know you two are the same across the state. Zoe, I'll start with you this time. What have you seen from the under-12 program since the change to the size 5 basketball?
Because I was a big part of bringing this in, was always really nervous about how once we implemented it, would we get the outcomes that we were hoping for? Thankfully, from what I've seen, yes, we have. Watching under-12 athletes or under-12 basketball look like a smaller version of senior basketball, you know, with the things that they're able to do, the way they're able to move, the way they're able to pass, the adaptive finishing they're able to actually pull off, being able to shoot from the perimeter at a consistent, or at least get with an ability to give it a chance, but even more so with technique because the ball's not too heavy to get that done. So it's been really exciting to be able to see that. And even the pace of the game, I feel like, has picked up, you know, because we're able to kick the ball ahead now, or we're able to, you know, push with a bit more pace with the bounce. So, it's been really exciting to see. And I'm hoping, you know, it's similar to what you just said, though, the outcomes for that, whilst we're able to sort of eye test and see that stuff when we watch an under-12 game, the real outcomes come later when they're older, the shot technique's right, the ability to pass is good, all those sort of things. So, you know, that might not be until 16s, 18s that we sort of see that over the course of the next sort of 4 or so years. But, yeah, it's been really exciting for me. I've really enjoyed seeing it and I'm quite relieved that it worked the way it did.
I get it. Bestie, you've been in the position where you've seen it now in two states. So you were down in Tassie when the size 5 basketball came in and now in Victoria, of course. So is it similar in terms of style, or is there a difference between the two states with how it sort of rolled out now that it's been a little bit longer?
Well, it was already in place when I went to work for BTAS, so yep. it was new to me
yep.
when I first got there, and I sort of said, "Oh, really? Okay, let's have a look at it." And I was probably 6 or 7 minutes into my first game, and I was like, "Yep, sold." I saw two kick ahead passes. I saw somebody be able to get all the way into the paint and throw it out to the opposite wing. I saw less fouls being called, more points being scored. I was like, yep, I'm sold on this 100%. So relieved that the HP team, prior to me starting, put the wheels in motion for this. And we obviously had it at Showcase, which it was before it was renamed Jamboree. And the results show it's really hard to put an argument against it. You know, the only thing is the cost of a ball. That is literally the only thing. And I think when you consider how long the general person would play basketball and factor that in, it's nothing. Kids can shoot better, pass better. Referees can have flow of the game a little bit better. There's probably 70% less turnovers and jump balls. It's just so much, so much better. And the kids, they enjoy it. You know, that there's success. They have success with the game. They are trying things that they see older athletes do, which is what we all did when we're younger, and we want them to do the same thing. And it's possible for them with a ball that is relevant to their size.
So do you think now maybe we start the push to bring back the jump ball because we don't need the possession arrow as much anymore?
I wouldn't mind the jump ball. In the older age groups to see how we go first.
Yep.
I miss the jump ball. I love jump balls.
Yeah. You could run some pretty cool little plays, like when you had the jump ball down your end and you were, like, you had the kid, like, you're trying to, like, seal off so you can try and get the quick little bucket and those types of things. It did bring a cool little element into the game where you'd have, like, the little small kid that dived, whatever that ends up being, on the ball against the giant, and the giant sort of thinks, yeah, I've got this covered, and the little kid just goes and pips it on him. It's like, I didn't mind that. So I think, I mean, it's a valid point. Like, with less jump balls, because you alluded to that, Bestie, like, less jump balls now because kids have got better control of the ball and the ability to pass it ahead and dribble it better, those types of things, maybe we don't need it.
Well, that's where I thought the possession arrow actually worked, was in the younger age groups to keep the game moving, because we all saw jump ball, they all crowd around the ball, jump ball. Then another jump ball, then another. And so the possession arrow, the introduction of that, I thought was a good idea for those age groups. But, yeah, if we're starting to see less of that, then maybe we could bring it back to a more pure style of the game.
Well, interestingly, during under-16 nationals, I was talking to Grant, and he said that, I've got to be careful what I say, a little while ago, maybe not that long ago, a little while ago, if the ball went out of bounds in the backcourt, you didn't have to throw it to the referee. You could just get it and inbound it straight away. So maybe that could be the trade-off. Jump balls back, but if it goes out of bounds in the backcourt, you just got to establish out of bounds and then throw it in. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that's so what you did at Showcase,
yeah, that
wasn't
was
it?
The very first show. That was a Zeppel thing. You saw it in Spain, I think it was. Like, that was a rule that if it went out of bounds, I think anywhere, like, it was like a free-for-all. Like, you'd have like four kids sprinting to go and get the ball because they'd be the inbounder. But it was kind of cool. Like, the flow of the game was phenomenal. Like, it was way quicker. Like, you'd have kids having to be switched on now. Like, we all know what happens with under-12 kids in particular. Whistle goes, they've checked out. Like, they're looking for who they can find in the stands or what's going on over on the other court, those types of things. So I think if the flow of the game can be better, it's a more enjoyable, and this sounds horrible, but it's more enjoyable as a coach to watch. And whilst it's not about us watching it, but I've got to feel like it's got to be a lot more fun for the players to play too. Like, that's extra possession. So those that play with the running clock in under-12s, they now have less time. That could be 2 or 3 minutes that they're now not having to sort of stand around as the clock's winding down and wait for the ball to come in over the course of a game. So I'm the same. Like, I'm a massive believer in this. Like, I enjoy watching under-12 basketball anyway because I find it's fun because kids do dumb stuff. And, you know, I find that amusing.
Hashtag under-12 life.
Under-12 life. That may make a comeback at some point, but... But I feel like kids stay on their feet a lot better now because they're not overbalanced trying to, like, heave a shot or dribble a basketball. Like, the passing is the one I've noticed the most. Like, that has genuinely been so much fun to watch kids' vision improve because now they can make a pass. It's not that self-preservation. I'm just going to dribble the ball because that's safest for me. It's now a case of I'm going to try and find someone else. It's and more perimeter shots. Like, I think it's actually been really fun.
Well, the passing one negates a little bit what we hate in under-12s, which is zone pressing. You know, it was always so effective because the athletes didn't have the strength to throw over the top of it, which we see in older age groups because they can do it. So I would say that it's probably less effective. However, we still see it too much.
Yep, no question. So, okay, I'll devil's advocate here. Now that there's a size 5 basketball in and kids can shoot from the perimeter more, are we going to allow zones back into 12s and 14s?
Nope.
No, I don't think so. The reason why I would say that is the kids still need to learn man-to-man principles first and man-to-man offense first. And, well, here's the throw out. If associations were more prepared to put their best coaches with the younger athletes, I would be probably more in favour of that because of their ability to teach multiple things. But at the moment, we still see associations having their best coaches with the old age groups because that's where the glory is. Whereas, as we know, a lot of European clubs, they put their best coaches with the younger athletes, and that's why they are turning out some of the most skilled players in the world. So I think the two go together. In the current environment, no, we definitely can't put it. If we had our better coaches or more experienced coaches with the younger age group, coupled with a longer off season, so we could do a little bit more skill around it, that would change everything.
Yeah, and this is just a personal preference for me, but I am 100% against offense of any kind in under-12s, other than pass, cut, motion, you know, dribble, penetration, receiver spot stuff. So if we, even with the best coaches, we allow zone back into under-12s, you're going to have to spend time that you should be spending on our, you know, our core fundamentals and skill development on learning a zone offense to try and make that effective. So, yeah, that's a big one for me.
Just for everyone's clarity, not a believer in it. I was just throwing it out there because yeah. I want to get like eight less emails from Warren Brown every Monday morning about is this team playing a zone? So purely selfish from my part. But, no, I do agree. Like, there's no point going backwards in the hope that we'll go forwards.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, we are seeing more zone internationally. Not a problem at all with that. We all get that. But similar deal if our players can shoot, you won't zone.
Well, and like, this is the thing, though. We're seeing so much more zone, even at a state level. You know, we go off to nationals and there is so much zone being played. Part of it is, you know, a bit of self-preservation throughout a tournament. You're playing a week-long tournament, so we understand that. But another big part of it is an inability to defend the ball. And we've just got to get better at that. And by allowing zones into the younger age groups, it's never going to happen. But we've got to spend as much time on the D as we're spending on the O at the moment. You know, we came back from COVID and it had to be all about the O because the O is fun. The O is what keeps them engaged, all that sort of stuff. As well as, you know, during COVID, that's all you could do is really ball handle and shoot.
Yeah, we weren't you doing know. Defensive slides in front of the, no. the laptop on Zoom, were we?
So, you know, but now is a time, and again, this is probably another completely different podcast, but now is the time to get back into that defensive mindset so we don't have to rely on zone as our go-to. We can have it just as that change-up and that you know, just something we want to have in a game just to spark a couple of possessions and then we're back into our man-to-man or whatever you're in.
Yeah, I do recall something brought up, I think it was on this podcast, about zone saying, could you have a time limit on the zone and you had a card, maybe, you know, you had to play your zone card. Or, yep. Do I remember something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that?
Yeah, that was that was Justin Shuler that brought that in. He sort of thought, you know, maybe for a quarter you're allowed to do it.
Can I play my zone card on your zone card?
Oh, like draw four.
Yeah.
Like
well, if I call a timeout, does that affect it? You know, like yeah. where does it stop?
Yeah, but, yeah exactly.
Yeah, I, overwhelmingly the answer is no. There's a lot of things that would have to change. I think let's just appreciate the passing and shooting that the size five is bringing us. And like Zoe said, it'll be interesting to see the changes in the athletes when they're a little bit older. And we will have data on that because the higher end kids, the NPP, SDP, state team kids at some point generally go through some shooting testing. So over some time, we'll get some data on that.
Yep, I think it's a good thing. So size five ball, big tick on that one. So lastly, as we start to move towards the end of the podcast, mandatory coach accreditation. So this came in a couple of weeks ago. And when I say it came in a couple of weeks ago, it came into all the BV competitions a couple of weeks ago. So this has actually been in country basketball since about 2017. It came in for country championships that you needed to have a coaching accreditation to coach on that bench. Now, there was some flexibility around that. And obviously the last couple of years with COVID, we haven't necessarily been able to run as many courses. So there has been a little bit of flexibility with that sometimes it wouldn't necessarily be the head coach that holds a certain level of accreditation. It might be the assistant coach, but as long as there was someone on that bench. So this has been in for a while, and in the sake of consistency, which we've spoken about a little bit now, we did want this across the board for a number of reasons. Now, I thought I put together a fairly comprehensive document as to why this should be the case with a whole range of FAQs, and as is always the case, some people have hit me on some questions back, which is fair enough too. Like I've got no problems answering all of those. But please read it before you send it in, because I did get some questions and it's like, yeah, if you just sort of scroll down half the page, it is actually sitting there in that little drop-down menu as well. So I think there's enough information out here. So a couple of things with this. So this is one of the big pushbacks we got was we're going to hurt and we're going to lose all our coaches. I disagree. Respectfully, I disagree. So is this in a domestic level? From a Basketball Victoria level? No, it's not. Now, it would probably be easier if it was, because they would already be getting a touch point at the domestic level with some level of accreditation. Then as they move into the representative levels and higher, you just need to add to that. Whereas at the moment, they're potentially having to go through one or two levels to coach in, say, VJBL or Big V or whatever the case may be. So there are some associations out there that have elected to go down that path of there is mandatory accreditation at the domestic level, which I am actually a supporter of. Like,
yeah,
we haven't
for them. Like, it's one of the most, if not the most important touch point for athletes entering into the sport. So congratulations to all the clubs that are putting that in place for their domestic club.
Yep, and one of those, I mean, the one I speak about probably the most is Southern Basketball, so down in formerly Sandringham. So Simon Giovannoni is rivaling me for the most amount of coaching courses delivered over the last couple of years, because he has put through a mountain of people down in that area with their domestic coaches, which has been phenomenal. And the pushback initially was there, oh, it's going to cost us coaches. But then it became, actually, it's not coaches because we now don't need as many, because our coaches are staying in the sport longer, because now they have a little bit more knowledge, they have a little bit more understanding as to what they should be doing and how they should be doing it. So their coaches are getting better, and they don't necessarily need to go and recruit new coaches every season because they're able to retain them. So there's a big shift in that. So if there are associations out there that want to go down this path, happy to support it, like from a BVN. Like that's not an issue at all.
But a big part of it's about support though, isn't it? Like we've all of us in this room have coached a team on a Friday night, and you know, when you first, you're new into it and all that sort of stuff, and the club says, do you want to coach? Yeah, okay, here's your team. See you in a year when we need trials again. Having that, just that extra added bit of support, bit of knowledge, and I don't know, it might just be me, but it feels good to invest in yourself as well and be better at something, even if it is just, you know, you're not wanting to become a career coach or anything like that, that's fine. But being the best version of what you can be, even if it's just off a little bit of knowledge from a course.
Yep.
There's so many benefits to it. As a coach, the first one is you join a family of coaches that have gone through the same thing as you. You form relationships while you're completing the courses. Definitely the higher courses that you spend a little bit of time together. And often you start sharing ideas with them as well. But the biggest one for me is, as a parent, I would want to know that my child's coach has gone through some sort of training. You know, and this is not just for basketball. This is for any sport. I don't take my daughter to a swimming lesson with somebody that isn't qualified or gone through any training.
You know, I can do doggy paddle. And
and I, as a parent, this should be reassuring that there is a minimum level required to be in charge of my child.
Yep.
And it's the same in any sport, education, no matter what.
Yep. No, I don't disagree. And especially we are talking the representative levels of basketball. Like, this isn't necessarily the entry-level stuff. This is like there's a massive time and cost commitment to play representative basketball in these competitions. So whether this be juniors or seniors, it doesn't matter in that space, I don't feel like, because it all counts towards the same thing. And, I mean, again, the three of us have presented numerous coaching courses over the years. Like, it is one of those things that's actually really enjoyable to do. Like, I love going and presenting coaching courses. Now, when I wake up in the morning, I think, oh, man, do I really want to go and do this today? Like, this could be, 6 hours on court. This could be brutal. But you walk out of there feeling, like, really invigorated as well as a presenter. Like, it is one of those areas where it's like, actually, that was a lot of fun. Like, I really enjoy talking to people, hearing their perspectives on things, finding out what they go through. How can we help assist that? How can we facilitate that as well? It's all those kinds of things. Like, it actually gives you a really good feeling at the end of going through a course. And we all went through the performance coaching course that was held in Victoria, I want to say 2018 off the top of my head. And that was a lot of fun. And again, no disrespect to anyone. It's not that the content was just like super challenging and that's all made us better coaches, but a lot of it was the discussion in the room about, okay, what have you gone through? Give me your take on this. How would you do this from that end? That was actually the really fun stuff. Like, I loved the actual conversations that went through in coaches. And like, I took a course on the weekend just around the corner from here. And it was really interesting. So there was as part of our club coaching course, we make the coaches have to do some coaching on the court. So they jump into groups of three or four. They find a drill. They go and present the drill to everyone else. How they go about coaching it, that's what we deliver feedback on. So it's not necessarily about the drill itself. It's about how they coach. What's the content look like is fine, but what do they emphasize? How do they talk? How do they correct those types of things? Which is something that you don't often get a lot of feedback on. What was interesting is one of the groups rolled out a drill that I had used with them 3 weeks earlier at a community coaching course. So
they got a big tick.
They got a massive tick. Like, and to be fair, like, whilst they stole the drill from me, I stole it from someone else. So I've got to pay that back the other way as well. But what was really cool about it is that there's been 3 weeks ago, clearly they had been using that drill at their training sessions in that time and had found a way to tweak it a little bit. Like, it wasn't exactly the same drill that I rolled out. There was the same principle behind it, but wasn't exactly the same. So even in that, that's a little bit of knowledge straight away that it's like, well, they've clearly taken something from it, gone and used it, got better at it, found it to work for them, and then gone and implemented it. And then I get to see it 3 weeks later when I'm presenting the next course. And it's like, well, that's actually a really cool thing, because now the 22 coaches I had the first time that I presented that course got that drill. But then the next time around, the next 18 have also got that same drill. So the ripple effect out of those coaching courses is really cool. And we tell them at every course, like, network with other coaches, find a way, like, turn up early for your training session and see what the coach before you does, stick around for 10 minutes afterwards, see what the coach does there, and steal from them. And that, well, and that's what it is.
And on top of that, it might seem extreme, but the kids that they're running that drill with, at least one of them will become a coach at some point, whether it's when they have children or before that, and then they'll run that drill as well. So, you know, it's just spreading it. And again, it's that support. You know, I did a course on Sunday afternoon as well, and just the best part is actually, and stay with me on this, at the end when they all just sort of hang around and you have just a little bit of a chat, and you know, they'll come up and ask questions about maybe an issue they're having or something like that. Now, if we're not all in that room together, then they don't have that opportunity to discuss that issue and get some possible outcomes from not just myself but the other coaches that were in the room as well. So it's a really good, like, besties on the money. It's the community that it helps create for you is fantastic, and it all leads into then gaining that support as a coach, because coaching can be quite lonely if we don't, as coaches, stick together.
I'm actually, believe it or not, still in a couple of group chats that were formed after I had presented some coaching courses, and just stuff gets thrown up there, you know, what's this, what's that, video here, there. It's fantastic.
Yep, that is good. And I mean, what's been really cool is the amount of coaches that are now becoming reconnected with the sport that have probably checked out a little bit. It's like they just continue coaching. They did a course back in 1992 somewhere, and they've still been coaching all the way through. They've elected to come and do the course again. Like, I had a couple in the course on the weekend that have said, look, I did the associate, or sorry, they called it level two at the time, back in 1994 or something like that. And it's like, where does this equate to? And it's like, look, it's actually the level above what you've been in today. And they're like, look, we love this. Like, this was great to come back and reconnect with the sport a little bit, because they have just gone about doing things the way they've always done them, which is not a problem at all. Like, it's fantastic. They're investing in themselves, but they've come in with a growth mindset. Oh, I might actually learn something here and be able to take that back to my club as well. So please don't think this is like, you know, we're not trying to beat people with a stick to coach. We want to try and make it as easy as possible, and we want to try and get as many people through as much training as possible, because as much as we've spoken about it from a coaching perspective, this is actually about the athletes. And we want as many kids in the sport for as long as we possibly can. And we know that kids drop out of the sport when it's no longer fun. And if we as coaches can work out what is fun for the kids and how we can make that more engaging for them to keep them in the sport, we have such a better chance of being a strong sport for a longer period of time. The first touch point for all our kids is usually with the coach. So if we can make better coaches and help along the way, you know, I think that's a really good thing for the sport. So,
well said.
In theory. Like, it's, you know, I might be wrong in 3 years' time and I've made everyone worse because they've been in one of my coaching courses. But I make no promises in that space, but that's the hope anyway. That does wrap us up for the return episode of the Talking Split podcast. In the show notes with this, I will put in all of our acronyms that we have gone through today, just to make sure that if there is something you don't understand, you can go back and have a little bit of a look as to what it is, and a little bit of a description there as well, with some links on it to our website as well. So again, coaches, if you do want to get involved, please do reach out. We would love to have as many coaches in these programs as we possibly can. Great touch points for coaching development as well. So the more we can have you involved, the best that would be for us. So coaches, thank you very much for listening. As always, if you could share and subscribe to the podcast, that would be fantastic. Zoe, bestie, appreciate you guys coming back in for the return episode more than anything else. Coops is probably sitting out there going, like, hey, come on, I didn't get the gig on the first one back. But that's okay. We'll deal with him next week. But thank you guys for jumping in as well.
Thank you.
Easy. Coaches, good luck with your coaching, and we will talk to everyone next week. Tune in, join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.